When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Kids Sports.
Fast becoming one of the most popular portions of this program. Yes, and once again, it's time for Kids Sports, where we invite the bright young people of Chicago and the Chicago area to come in and do a WGN sports report with us. Andy Mazur, are you ready to meet Casey Tyrrell?
Casey, I am ready to meet you.
Okay. The bigger question, Casey, is are you ready to... That's Andy Mazur right up there. See, we're not allowed to be in the same room.
Yeah, we have to be separated. There's a law.
It's a whole restraining order thing. You'll understand more when you get older. But, they're different places. But that's Andy, and that's... See the picture of the guy above him right there? That's Dave Schwann. Schwann, okay. Say hi to Casey.
Hey, good morning. Good to have you with us.
Good morning.
So you're a sixth grader, right?
Yep.
Sixth grader, and it's William B. O'Renick School. Is
yes.
that right, in Joliet?
Yes.
Yeah. So now they had told me Troy Sherwood Middle School. Is that what's the difference between those two?
So it's intermediate, so it's fifth and sixth on one side, and then you cross the parking lot, and it's seventh and eighth is middle school.
Oh, which is the coolest side of the parking lot?
Intermediate
school. Yeah, your part is the coolest part. Yeah, exactly right. Now, I hear that you are kind of a fanatic sports fan, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if everybody can see. We do have cameras here, and you can watch on WGNTV.com. But Casey has the coolest bow tie on this morning.
He sure does.
Right? Can you see
it? He is the dapper young man down
right
there.
Yeah, we should all dress a little more like Casey around here. We all look like slobs compared to that. describe your bow tie, because it's really super cool.
It's blue and red, and it's got the Cubs logo
on
it.
Yeah, that's right. It does have the Cubs logo all over it, because you are a super big Cubs fan, right?
Yeah.
And I was just hearing the story about how you were down at Wrigley Field.
Yep.
To explain that whole story. This was during one of the playoff games a couple of years ago, right?
In 2015, I was out with my brother by the gate, and a WGN reporter came up to me and asked if I want to be interviewed.
Yeah. And was it fun?
Yes.
You were on TV then, right?
Yeah.
Wow. So coming down to radio, that's like a step down for you, right? And you were telling me that you have a favorite WGN TV sportscaster?
Yeah, Pat Tomasulo.
Yeah, why do you like Pat Tomasulo? We're trying to figure out why we should like him.
He's just funny, and he knows his sports stuff.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, maybe we can make that happen. Maybe we can arrange for you to happen. Maybe, you know, he's got this new show called Man of the People on that's on Saturday nights at 10 o'clock. Maybe you can come down for a taping of that sometime.
That would be great.
Okay. All right. So now also, you publish something called Casey's Tribune Sports.
Yes.
Explain that to me.
Like every week or two, I do a sports newspaper about everything around the world and Chicago and area news.
Yeah. And like what are like some of the things that were in, you know, some of your favorite things to write? You write the whole thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So what would have been some of your favorite things to write about?
Mainly about Chicago sports.
Like which teams? What have you been some of your stories lately?
About the Cubs with Tommy La Stella got into a prank war with the Cubs organization.
Okay, all right. So you like the funny stories then? Yeah. Okay. What do you think about Jake Arrieta leaving the Cubs and that move?
Well, it's not that great for the Cubs, but it's good for his family and him.
Yeah, okay. All right, good. So are you set to actually do the sports here for us this morning?
Yes.
Well, we're glad to have you here with us. Casey Tyrrell is here doing kids' sports this morning. Casey, take it away.
Cinderella is still dancing. Sister Jean and the Ramblers are still alive. Loyola was coming off of a true dogfight when they took down Nevada Wolfpack in the Sweet 16. Loyola came out of the gates firing against Kansas State. K-State only led when it was 5-4 and 3-2. The Ramblers were up big, 36-24 at the break. Ben Richardson led the Ramblers. He had 6 three-pointers and to finish with a career-high 23 points on 7-for-10 shooting. The Ramblers started hot, were all hot all game for a convincing win, 78-62 over Kansas State. Loyola is heading to Texas for its second ever Final Four appearance. Last time was in 1963 when Loyola won it all. Loyola becomes just the fourth number 11 seed to make it to the Final Four. Up next for the Ramblers is Michigan. The Wolverines advance to San Antonio with a 58-54 win over Florida State. The Cubs had a split squad yesterday. In their first game, the Cubs came up short to the Mariners 7-3. That did not stop them in their second game from shutting out the Rockies 3-0. Cubs play this afternoon against the Royals at 2:05. The Sox beat the Dodgers 7-3 yesterday. You can catch them today at 2:05 in their spring training finale game against the Brewers. Jonathan Toews is out with an upper body injury and will be reevaluated next week. This did not stop the Hawks from beating the Islanders 3-1 last night. Goals came from Kane, Saad, Seabrook. Goalie Antoine Forsberg had 31 saves last night. The Hawks will play the Sharks next on Monday. The Bulls had another disappointing loss last night to the Pistons, 117-95. Denzel Valentine led the Bulls in scoring with 18 points. The Bulls play the Rockets next on Tuesday. This is Casey Tyrrell reporting for WGN Radio, 720 AM.
That is a fantastic job, Casey. I got to say, a lot of our kids' sports that we do, we actually write the sportscasts for them. But you did the whole thing by yourself today, right?
Yep.
Yeah, we came to you with our script. And he's like, I don't need your script. I don't need your stinking script. I wrote my own script here. You did a great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, is that fun? Is this what you want to do when you grow up?
Yes.
Yeah, you want to be a sportscaster here at WGN?
Sure.
Yeah, replace Pat Tomasulo.
Why not?
Yeah, you could take his spot. He'll be really old by the time you're ready for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did a fantastic job. We've got we're going to give you a $50 gift certificate from Lou Malnati's, so you can have a nice big pizza party and invite all the people that you brought here with you. And introduce everybody. Who'd you bring here with you this morning?
I brought my parents and my two cousins and my Aunt Jean, who nominated me to be here today.
Oh, very nice. Do you want to say hi to anybody special who might be listening this morning?
My teachers and staffs at my school, my family around the country that is listening, the Whiteford Bulldogs, that is my youth baseball team, and my supporters that buy my newspaper every week, and hi to Pat Tomasulo.
Hi to Pat. Boy, you are working that Tomasulo angle. I love that. Now, can people buy your newspaper?
Yeah, 50 cents.
Wow. That's a lot of money. I don't know. Is it, how do they do that? How do they buy your newspaper from you?
When I go to like other places, and if I see you around and you want a newspaper, I just...
Oh, you sell them yours. Oh, that's very clever. Okay, very good. Well, Casey, it's really nice to meet you. Thanks for coming in. Thank you, everybody, for coming in. You did a fantastic job. I think we had a good one today, Andy, don't
Absolutely.
You think?
Absolutely. I like the fact that you wrote his own stuff.
Right. If you could just go upstairs and help Andy with his sports guest.
9:30 to 10 and 10:30, it would be great.
For the rest, that would be great. Casey Tyrrell this morning. From William B. Orenick School in Joliet.
The WGN forecast today. And our far-flung forecast, not all that far away from Chicago, down the road a piece, as they say. You could either use I-55 or... I prefer Route 66.
Wow, this is the first time you've actually given directions to wherever the
we are going,
subject matter is. If you turn left at the stoplight and then you just...
You can turn left and then just go down the road a piece to Normal, Illinois. Normal, Illinois.
Okay.
Adjacent, of course, to Bloomington, Illinois. As a matter of fact, when the town was formed on June 7th, 1854, it was called North Bloomington.
Hmm.
It was then renamed Normal after a normal school. There was Illinois State Normal University, now known as Illinois State University, the state's oldest public university. And we bring all this up today because at one time there was a coach there named Porter Moser, who was the head coach at Illinois State between 2003 and 2007. Before he went to St. Louis, and then from 2011 on up to the present day, the coach at Loyola. So Porter Moser was coach at Illinois State in Normal from 2003 to 2007.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yep. And then up to St. Louis, and then became head coach at Loyola in 2011. Do I have all that right, Andy?
You have all that right.
How about that?
I'm surprised you could follow it.
Well, I turned down the road a piece.
I was still trying to figure out all of his rolling traffic closures. Still working on that. You know, I've often wondered why Normal was called Normal.
The Illinois State University was they originally called those normal schools. In fact, my alma mater
as opposed to abnormal.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know,
I mean,
I'm
seriously.
Not normal.
No, but
so.
I mean, that's why they were schools like average schools like that.
They called them normal schools because it was to train high school graduates to be teachers by educating them in the norms. Of various, so it was a normal school. My school, Ball State University, was at one time Indiana Normal, and then it was Ball State Teachers College, and Illinois State was once a Illinois Normal Teachers College before they became full-fledged universities.
Hmm.
So that's where the term comes from. There were a lot of them around the United States.
I always wondered about Normal.
Well, we are normal on this show. Everybody knows we're normal.
Mm-hmm. No longer do I have to wonder because of the educational value that you bring to this show every week.
The Peabody Award-winning educational value.
Right.
By the way, they're colder and normal than they are today, so it could be a little abnormal. Get it?
You were doing so well there.
22 in normal.
Is that below normal?
I complimented you. We were doing so great.
22. We have 31 in Chicago. It's only 20.
What is it in normal again?
22.
And what is it here?
And it's 31 in Chicago. Oh. So they are 9 degrees colder than we are. Partly sunny, though, as it is here.
Subnormal. Normal right now.
So there you have it.
All right.
And you can get Chicago news first at the top of every hour. I'm Dave Schwann, who's not all that normal on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Yeah, so far the bar to beat on this program is a sixth grader from Joliet.
With a bow tie.
With a cool bow tie.
I'm wearing one next week.
And this is Dean Richards Sunday Morning, the 8K Shamrock Shuffle is going on in Chicago this morning, and joining us on the phone line from the run itself is Olympian Carrie Tollefson, middle distance runner, was on the U.S. 2004 Summer Olympic team, 13-time state champion from Minnesota, Dawson, Minnesota. Carrie, nice to have you with us this morning. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm good. I'm glad the race is over, but what a fun race. It was an amazing day.
Yeah, anybody else, I would apologize for it being kind of a chilly morning, but for somebody from Minnesota, you probably think it's absolutely balmy outside today.
You know, I think it's warmer in Minnesota today than it is here. So
I think you may be right.
I'm cold too, but it was really fun. I mean, even though there was a little bit of wind and it was chilly at the start, you really didn't notice it once you got going. There was so much hype and you know, everyone was so excited. So it was a great day.
Yeah, this may be one of the more enthusiastic runs of the year, I think, because it's the first big run of the year in downtown Chicago. You know, it sort of signals an end to wintertime, that spring is right around the corner. That's got to be part of the vibe out there, I would think, right?
Oh, yeah. Everyone is excited for spring training to start. And you know, when spring, it goes right into that summer real fast. So I think everyone is excited. It's like a sea of green out here. Everyone's celebrating their Irish heritage. They're, you know, kind of having a party while they're racing. And now they're obviously at the after party if they're all done. So it was a really fun, exciting, and very uplifting day already.
Yeah, I can imagine. What's the most inspiring part of a day like this for you, of someone who has competed on, you know, such major levels, including the Olympic Games? Participating in an event like this motivates you in what way?
You know, I really like the stories, hearing who people are running for or why they run. You know, I'm a mom of three. I work full-time now. Just getting out the door is tough. And to be able to line up with people, and everyone has their own thing, right? You know, everyone is doing this because they have someone that they've loved that's passed, or they're trying to fight for cancer research, or they're trying to fight obesity, or whatever it is. we all have our own things, and I think that's what's really neat about it. You know, the race director, Kerry Pinkowski, just ran this race for the first time since 1988, and he raised $20,000 for the American Cancer Society. And he is not the only person doing that, but he is a big name. He's the reason why we have this race today. And that, to me, just is just amazing. For the race director to lead by example like that, I think that's pretty cool. So that was one of my favorite stories of the weekend, but also all the other 25,000 people have their own, and it's just really fun to listen to that.
Yeah, you know, I of course, am delighted to speak to you, but normally for the Shamrock Shuffle, we throw a call in to see how things are going and, you know, just kind of get the lay of the land a little bit. And Carrie's the guy that we, you know, for all of these years, Carrie is the guy that we normally talk to. And I sort of wondered why, you know, why we weren't getting our Carrie this year.
You're going to get different, Carrie.
Right. But, you know, delighted, of course, to speak to you. I did not know. He didn't mention to us during the process of setting this up that he himself was going to be out on the track this morning.
Yeah, he and his wife ran, and I've already seen them. So they're already in the tent, you know, warming up and talking to people. But he definitely had, I think he had so many obligations, but he also was getting ready to run this race, so he didn't know how he was going to feel. So he called me up and said, "Kerry, come into town and help me with some of these media appearances." Yeah. And, you know, and it's been really fun for me to come, but also just to see him back in his element. He's running again. You know, he and I both went to Villanova, so we were rooting for the Villanova guys and the Loyola guys. Awesome job there. I can't wait to see them play. But, you know, we've been having fun, but he's been nervous about this. He was doing this for a big cause, and he wanted to make sure his day went right.
Yeah, what do you think is behind the nonstop interest in this sport? You know, anytime that there's a big event like this, the Shamrock Shuffle, or, of course, Chicago Marathon, you know, the many runs that we have around the world, really, there's never been any lack of interest in any of this.
No, you know, I do think anybody can do this race, whether you walk it, you jog it, you run it, whatever it is. And I think that you can't be afraid of getting out here and trying, because there's so many people that have been in your shoes. So for me, I think it's just been fun to hear that. You know, I am coming from the elite side, and there's no denying that when you're an Olympic athlete, you are coming from, you know, the top of the game. But I am also now learning how hard it is for people that do have so much going on in their lives to get out the door. And I think that people can't be afraid of that. There's so many people that are, you know, have walked in that on that path with you, and you just need to come and experience it. Whether you are running it, volunteering, spectating, whatever it is, this day is truly inspiring. And they've done this race for 39 years. This is the 39th running of it. So something is pretty cool about being out here.
Yeah.
So I encourage you to come if you've never been.
Yeah, very much so. It's great to have you here in Chicago. You'd mentioned you're a mom of three, so I imagine that's you know, it takes a lot of your time. What else does an Olympian do, you know, to occupy their time?
Yeah, you know, now I'm on the other side of things. So I do the Bank of America Chicago Marathon television coverage. I'm doing a lot of speaking. I have a camp. I'm on a lot of different telecasts, webcasts. But, you know, Olympians go into the workforce after and do things that they went to school for as well. So I went to Villanova University for communications with an emphasis on broadcast. So I'm lucky that I'm doing my job, but still being able to be kind of rubbing shoulders with the elite runners and right, runners of all abilities. It's really fun for me. So I've enjoyed it so much. It's kept me excited about being healthy in life. And I hope I can do it for many more years. I'll be here in Chicago three or four more times now before the marathon. So this is becoming my second hometown.
Good deal. Well, I'm glad you could have a nice summer place to hang out when the weather's too cold in Minnesota. Carrie Tollefson, great to talk to you. Thank you so much, and enjoy your day in Chicago.
Thanks so much for having me, and we'll see you guys next year.
So among the very moving performances that took place yesterday at the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C., was a collaboration between two of Broadway's biggest names. Lin-Manuel Miranda, who created Hamilton, got together with Ben Platt, who we saw here in Chicago in Book of Mormon. He went on to star in Dear Evan Hansen on Broadway. won a Tony Award for it. They're both amazing performers. The songs from both of these shows are amazingly touching and poignant. And they took two songs, one from Hamilton, one from Dear Evan Hansen, and combined them together in this beautiful duet, Lin-Manuel Miranda and Ben Platt.
Reached our glory, but I will gladly join the fight. And when our children tell their story, they'll tell the story of tonight. They'll tell the story of tonight. Tonight.
Have you ever felt like nobody was there? Have you ever felt forgotten in the middle of nowhere? Have you ever felt like you could disappear? Like you could fall and no one would hear?
Well, let that lonely feeling wash away.
All we see is light.
'Cause maybe there's a reason to believe you'll be okay. When you don't feel strong enough to stand, you can reach out your hand and hold.
Raise a glass to freedom, something they can never take away. No matter what they tell you,
someone will come running to take you home.
Raise a glass to all of us, tomorrow there'll be more of us. Telling the story of tonight.
The shadows, the morning is fading.
The story of tonight.
All is new.
It's only a matter of time. Even when the dark comes crashing through, when you need a friend to carry you, when you're broken on the ground, sun comes streaming in, 'cause you'll reach up and you'll rise again. If you only look around, you will be found. And when our children tell their story,
you will be found.
They'll tell the story of tonight. No matter what they tell you,
tomorrow there'll be more of us.
Telling the story of tonight. The story of tonight.
It's called Found Tonight. Lin-Manuel Miranda, Ben Platt. You can download it yourself on YouTube, on iTunes. It's on all the platforms right now, and a portion of the proceeds go to the March for Your Lives that took place yesterday. I want to play this. I just found this a few minutes ago, and I think it's so cool. It's a song honoring Sister Jean.
Oh, cool.
Of
Loyola this is cool.
fame. This is to the tune of the Michael Jackson song.
This is cool.
Billie Jean. It's simply called Sister Jean.
Came here with a great spirit for Loyola, and so just go ahead and set the world on fire.
Well, she was more like a Jesuit on a TV screen. I said, don't cheer, just say prayers, please. You are the nun who will dance with the poor and the round.
Sweet 16.
She says, I am the nun who will dance with the poor.
Everyone knows who Sister Jean is. When she walks, eyes turn.
Sister always told me, be careful what you do. Don't go around breaking commandments.
You did so well.
Sister always told me, be careful who you play. And be careful when you lose. 'Cause the carbon knows the truth. Hey, Sister Jean is not my mother. She's just a man who happens to be a nun.
Sister Jean's coming, everybody stops.
She says, I-
about the Loyola Ramblers, we'd like to see a big W.
Oh, they have to play that before next next week's game for Sister Jean, right?
That's awesome. Amazing.
Or somebody go on Colbert or Jimmy Kimmel or one of the late night shows and perform this song, Sister Jean. It's by The Ringer. Ringer Records is all I know, and it's available on YouTube if you want to check it out and pass it around. But talking about Sister Jean, Phil Sklar is on the phone, who is the co-founder and CEO of the National Bobblehead Hall of Fame and Museum. Phil, how do you like that Sister Jean song?
That's a great one. Love it. That's going to be a number one hit, and I think the Sister Jeans could be a name of a new band.
That's right. Very true. That's very true. Now, the National Bobblehead Hall of Fame and Museum has gotten the Sister Jean fever. Explain what you guys are doing.
Yes, so we saw that Loyola was interested in doing a new Sister Jean bobblehead. There was one back in 2011 and 2015, and so we reached out to him, partnered with him pretty quickly in about a day and a half, and got the new Sister Jean bobblehead available for pre-order, and it's been our best-selling bobblehead ever. In just over a day and a half, we've sold over 3,500 of them and counting.
That's amazing.
All 50 states, someone has purchased a Sister Jean bobblehead.
Really? People from all over the country are into this. Now, how does the new Sister Jean bobblehead differ from the ones that were given away at games in years past?
Yeah, we gave this one a little bit of a modern touch. She'll look just like she does now, and we have her in her black Loyola warm-up with the Loyola scarf that everybody has come to know and love across the country. And she's smiling, happy, going to the Final Four in San Antonio. And, it also has her famous sneakers with her name on the back. It'll have Sister on one shoe and Jean on the other.
Right. How has some shoe company not gotten involved in, gotten a Sister Jean endorsement or something for one of their
shoes? The Air Jeans?
Yeah, exactly. So these new bobbleheads, how do people get them?
Yeah, so they go online on their website, store.bobbleheadhall.com, or on Loyola's website, the Loyola Athletics page, and click right there and pre-order them now. We've had somebody this morning bought 30 of them. So we don't know what they're going to do with them all, but people are really loving Sister Jean and her positive message and inspiration that she's provided, I think, not only to Loyola, but to a lot of people across the country.
Yeah.
She's just great to listen to.
I think that's exactly the attraction, not only such a tried and true sports fan and so dedicated to her, Loyola Ramblers, but everything that she represents, I think, is what is connecting with people. So people can go to your website or to the Loyola website and order. The cost is what?
Yeah, they're $25 each and a flat rate shipping of $8. So, you can hop on right there. And, I think, Chicago and Loyola's known about Sister Jean for a long time, but now the whole world is really falling in love with her.
That is the truth. Boy, that is the truth. Give me the websites one more time. People want to... Go ahead.
Yeah, store.bobbleheadhall.com.
Store.bobblehead.com.
Bobblehead Hall, H-A-L-L.
Okay, all right. Or the if you go to Loyola's page, and you can certainly find it there as well, right?
Yep, and we're crazy to see how many people across the country are really so excited about Loyola and about Sister Jean. It's great to see.
Love it. The new Sister Jean bobbleheads are going like hotcakes. Phil Sklar is the co-founder and CEO, National Bobblehead Hall of Fame and Museum. I see your area code's 414. Where in Wisconsin are you?
Yeah, we're in Milwaukee. We actually are getting our permanent location set up, so Sister Jean will be in the Bobblehead Hall of Fame here, hoping to open by the end of April, and really excited. We have about 7,000 unique bobbleheads that will be on display, including two Sister Jean bobbleheads.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Phil, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Dean.
You there, Schwani?
I'm here.
Okay. Just making sure somebody's paying attention, because I certainly was not.
I was waiting for my cue.
I was looking out the window because the runners.
Are you seeing any runners yet?
Yeah, the runners from the Shamrock Shuffle are starting to stroll down Michigan Avenue.
Any band members from the Rolling Closures yet?
And I'm trying to savor each and every one because this will be our final Shamrock Shuffle here on Michigan Avenue.
We need to invite them in then. Have pictures. Yeah, definitely.
We'll send them up to the seventh floor so you can
Thank you. You
can do all that.
I'll be locking my door.
I'm just perfectly happy to look at. There were two people dressed like shamrocks or leprechauns.
Leprechauns? Huh.
Leprechauns running down the street. It's not easy to do an 8K in leprechaun clothes, as anyone can tell you. Coming up, Shawnee, we're going to get to a few more of the highlights from yesterday's March for Your Lives.
Right.
There are several marches, actually, that took place in Chicago. The big one was down at Union Park, but there were several suburban watches, also very well attended.
And downstate, I might add.
Downstate, in all the major cities in the U.S., most notably Washington, D.C., where there were so many amazing performances. I happened to be in New York yesterday. I didn't go to the march because I was doing some interviews, but Paul McCartney very poignantly spoke while he was just marching. He didn't get on the stage and make a speech, but they stopped him while he was just marching along with everybody else and spoke very poignantly. We're going to share that coming up. Lin-Manuel Miranda performed a beautiful song with Ben Platt. And Jennifer Hudson, whose family was racked by gun violence a few years ago when her mother, her brother, and her little nephew were all murdered. She spoke very eloquently about it. We'll share some of all of that with you all coming up in a little while. But before that, though, our weekend theater segment. Remember a while back when the Gloria Estefan musical On Your Feet did its pre-Broadway run here in Chicago before it went on to New York. Now it's back here in Chicago again featuring the amazing hits of Gloria and Emilio Estefan. It's here until April the 8th, and what a pleasure to have one of the stars of the show here with us, Mauricio Martinez. Welcome. Nice to have you here with us.
Thank you, Dean. I'm excited to be here.
I like how you came alive when the music, when I would just turn the music on.
Let's get on your feet.
I was getting my own private performance here this morning. Welcome. That's so nice to have you here with us.
It's so nice for me to be here and so nice. What a view. Wow. I'm just like, I want to work here with you. May I?
It can be a little, you're more than welcome to.
Okay. May I stay?
You may stay. You may be a little disappointed at some of the things that you see happening outside the window. But it's got to be so much fun for you to be in the show. I mean,
yes.
Most of Gloria's music is so celebratory. I mean, some is very touching and very, very
indeed.
Poignant.
Yeah.
But to be able to perform and to tell her very, very interesting life story through her words and her music.
It's a beautiful gift. I'm very honored and humbled. It's literally like I feel like a little kid in Christmas Eve that just got a great gift. Emilio's such a beautiful role to play, and it's so beautifully written by Alex Inalaris, who won the Oscar for Birdman.
Yeah.
And Gloria's music is so beautiful to sing. We have an amazing cast. It's a great story. And it's a great. This is a very important stop for us because this is where it all started 3 years ago. You know this, so it's very emotional. It's very beautiful to see how people remember the show here and how people were expecting it to come back. And the audience on opening night on Wednesday, which just was wild. I don't think we've had a crowd like that since Miami. We opened the tour
Chicago.
In Miami.
We drink a lot here. It's great.
I love that.
That may be the problem.
No, I'm just kidding. Well, I'm Mexican, so I guess. But I'm very excited, and it's thrilling night after night. You can't get bored with a show like this. Yeah. It's very festive. It's a celebration of Latin pride. I'm an immigrant. I'm from Mexico. I'm living the American dream. So I feel so identified with both Emilio and Gloria in more ways than one. So it's an honor. Yeah. What can I say?
In many ways, the story is really, it's the great American story.
It is. It is, definitely.
Of, Cuban immigrants who come to America and, knock the ball out of the park in their chosen field.
And what a way to do it.
And make the road for others to follow
them. Exactly, which is the most important part of the story and the legacy of the Estefans. They opened the doors to so many of us, including myself. But, I mean, we're talking about people like Ricky Martin, Shakira, Enrique Iglesias, Thalia, so many Latin artists that after them, they just opened the doors. She was the first. She was a pioneer.
Yep.
Of course, he was always behind her, and he was the driving force, and it was his vision. It was her voice. And they're a perfect duo. And they always believed in each other. And when you see them today, still in love, still together, and still just humble. And
They are such a cute couple.
I love them.
I don't know how long they've been married. It has to be.
Over 30 years.
I was going to say it. I was going to guess 30.
Years,
I didn't want to date them in any way.
No.
But they're so cute when they're together.
They're adorable.
And when they were here for the pre-Broadway run, I would run into them in restaurants and places where they weren't, you know, quote, on for the press. They were just out having dinner someplace. And they were so cute holding hands while they're having dinner.
They're the best.
So adorable.
They've become like mentors, and Emilio has become like a father figure. And he's so loving and so giving, both of them, you know. They give us so much advice as to how to portray them and how to take care of ourselves, our bodies. She's been on tour for many, many years, so she comes and gives us all advice on how to take care of our voices, how to sleep. And he's just great.
What kind of advice do you get? How to sleep? What has she told you how
hours,
to sleep?
Hours.
Oh, the number of hours to get plenty of sleep.
At least 8 or 9 hours.
Wow.
Because if not, 8 shows a week, you're not going to make it. You know, it's a tough gig.
It's very physically demanding.
Yeah, because on top of the shows, you have to do the press, and you have to be always present and always there, available. And it's an emotional roller coaster too. Emilio's role is very emotional. The arc is so well driven and so well written. I literally age on stage, and I start off as a teenager wanting to eat up the world with these white shorts and just smiling with a thick accent. And I go through so much in 2.5 hours that after the show is done, I'm exhausted. I usually go to the shower, just take a shower, and then have a bite to eat, and then go to sleep because it's exhausting.
It starts again the next day. Yeah.
And when it's today, we had 2 show days. Yesterday, we had a 2 show day on Thursday. And now we have it. This week it's 3 2-show days, so it's great. I love it though. I wouldn't be anywhere else.
I know that's what the performers say when I drag them into here on 2 show days. I drag them in for TV or radio, and then they have 2 shows to follow afterwards.
Oh, but I'm happy. I could talk about the show forever.
Yeah, forever. I want to talk about the show, but I also want to talk about you and other things that you've done that kind of took you to this path, and
of course
took you to Broadway, which must have been thrilling for
you.
We'll come back and talk more about On Your Feet, which is in Chicago at the Cadillac Palace Theater. It's playing through April the 8th. BroadwayInChicago.com. Come shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer. Come on, shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer. And back in the day when this song came out, I was a DJ on a music radio then. This blew our minds when this came out.
I remember. I was a kid in Mexico.
Right. You were,
when the song came out, I was like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And I remember. I could not know the lyrics. I could not say. I would just go.
That's what I was doing. That's exactly the same thing I was doing.
But growing up in Mexico, I loved Gloria Estefan. My mother would play her albums in Spanish. And then I would watch MTV because I'm a kid of the 80s, so I watched MTV. And I couldn't understand why the same artist that my mom played in Spanish was doing the same song
in English.
In English.
Yeah.
That was so interesting to me. And I was growing up with both languages. I'm from Monterrey, Mexico, which is a very Americanized city in Mexico. Yeah. So we grow up with both cultures, you know?
Yeah, right.
So it was very interesting. I was always fascinated by her and by that. So now that I get to play her husband, it's just like full circle.
That's, you know? That must be so mind blowing for
it's
you.
It's mind blowing
to have grown up with it. But you know, I remember when the show first opened here, and it took me back to my DJ days because this was the height of my music days on radio,
right?
Premiering each of these songs in a new Gloria Estefan song was Miami Sound Machine.
Yes,
even before that. song was coming out, and you know they were celebratory, like Conga,
yeah,
or they were
Get on Your Feet, Rhythm is Gonna Get You,
yeah, or some of the touching songs, and especially after her accident,
yeah,
when she was writing and singing about her
coming out of the dark,
yeah,
reach
coming out of yeah. almost dying when
yes.
when she was struck by the truck,
the truck,
and that's yeah. what this the show covers it all. I mean, takes you through her
in
whole
a beautiful
life story.
Way. It's it's an emotional roller coaster, and Act Two gets very profound and very deep, and the scenes in the hospital and the scenes about the crash are they're hard to do, you know.
Yeah.
I've gone through a lot of loss in my life. I'm a cancer survivor, so I've been in the hospital. I know what it is. I know what loss is. And so I relate to her a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've literally been the Gloria to the Emilio and the Emilio to the Gloria
yeah.
in my life,
yeah.
in my own personal life. So I pull from that. And it's very cathartic, you know. People sometimes, even myself, when I was flown from Mexico to go see it, to audition for the role, and I saw it, I honestly thought I was going to see a jukebox musical with Gloria Estefan tunes. And it's so much more than that. It was so profound, and I was so moved by the story, by their struggle. I was so inspired. And there was one scene in particular in the first act when the record executive doesn't believe in them. And he tells both Gloria and Emilio, you'll never cross over, change your name, this will never happen, it's an illusion. And Emilio has this beautiful monologue that ends with a phrase, this is what an American looks like. I just was bawling my eyes out. And that was the moment when I said, I want to play that role.
I have to have that role.
I have to say those lines, you yeah. know? And now I get to say them every night.
Yeah, that's amazing. Talk a little bit about what brought you into this show.
Yeah.
In the first place, living in Mexico, performing in Mexico.
Yes.
Listening to these songs on the radio, pursuing your own career.
Pursuing my own career.
Not only on stage, but as a musical performer as well.
Yeah, I'm a recording artist. I have two albums. I've done over 7 soap operas, which are called telenovelas over there. And
we love our telenovelas.
You got to love them.
I have no idea what they're saying in them, but I love watching them.
I did 7 of them back home, and I was working on a new show, a TV show that I have for NBC called El Vato, which two seasons are on Netflix right now. And I was doing that, and a friend of mine who's a composer from Mexico wrote a musical that was going to debut at the New York Musical Festival. This is 2 years ago. And he called me up and said, Mao, I would love for you to be the lead. You're perfect for it. Are you available? This is in New York. And I was like, well, yeah, I would love to go to New York. I studied there 20 years ago, and I haven't been back, and I would love to go back. You know, I was very close to being cast as Ricky Martin's understudy for Evita many years ago, but it was down to like 3 of us, and I didn't get it. So I was like, oh, Broadway's a dream, so maybe this can open doors, I thought.
Yeah.
And I went to do this show called Children of Salt. And little did I know that critics were there and at this festival, and casting directors were there. So a week after I opened the show, I get an email from the casting director for On Your Feet saying, would you be interested in auditioning for the role of Emilio? I didn't even know there was a musical about the Estefans. I was so disconnected.
Yeah.
And I said, of course. So they flew me back from Mexico. And like I say, they imported me, the Estefans imported me like guacamole and tequila from Mexico, you know? It was beautiful. It was nerve-wracking. I flew to New York, and the moment I auditioned for them, the casting director, who's a dear friend of mine now, said, Jerry Mitchell is in the room, just so you know. And of course, I knew who he was. Sergio Trujillo, I'm like, okay, I was nervous. And Alex Dinelaris, I'm like, okay, so Olivier winner, Oscar winner, Tony winner, right there.
No
they're
pressure.
Gonna see me. And then he says, oh, and by the way, Gloria and Emilio are there. So break a leg.
Yeah.
So I was just like sweating, and I shook Emilio's hand. I spoke to him in Spanish. I said, mucho gusto en conocerte. He responded, very smiley, very charming. And I kissed Gloria's hand. And I just sang directly to her. I had to sing Don't Want to Lose You Now,
oh, wow.
Which is my favorite Gloria Estefan song. I grew up listening and singing it in Spanish. So I sang directly to her. And then months later, I got the call. And
probably better, right, that you shut out the other distractions in the room.
Yeah.
And you were just able to look into her eyes and relate to her one-on-one.
And you know what I thought, Dean? I was like, if I'm auditioning to play her husband and manager, might as well just like look to her, sing directly to her.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And she gave me so much peace just by looking. Like, she didn't make any face or anything, you know? Like, you know, people in the auditions don't really show their emotions.
They don't react.
But it was beautiful. And then months later, she said, you were my pick. Like, I wanted you. So it's beautiful that I got to fulfill my dream. I've always wanted to be on Broadway, and this is my 14th musical, but it's my first Broadway show, and I got the blessing of playing Emilio on Broadway with the original Broadway cast, and then launched the tour, and we've been on the road for 6 months, and it's just been a blessing. The role, it's a role of a lifetime.
Talking about Jerry Mitchell, he is in town right now.
Yes.
Right down the street from you.
Yes, he's going to come see us today,
So no pressure again.
No pressure again. Yeah. He's here again. Yeah. He's going to give us notes.
he's here launching Pretty Woman, the musical at the Oriental Theater.
And we're all so excited. We're going to go see it next Sunday because we have a Broadway schedule next week, so we can actually go and have a meet and greet between his two casts.
Nice.
And I'm excited to see him again because I miss him. I haven't seen him since rehearsal. So
yeah, he was here a couple of weeks ago with Bryan Adams. And I've interviewed him before. He's a super nice guy.
He's a wonderful
man. Very, very nice man.
Wonderful
but
man.
You think about some of the shows that he has created.
Yeah.
It's, again, mind-blowing.
He's legendary.
Yeah. I just think about that. It's like that came out of somebody's brain. All these shows.
It's amazing.
Came out of somebody's brain, which is.
He's amazing, creative. He takes risks. He knows what he wants. And he's great at directing, you know. I love working with him. And Sergio Trujillo, I have to say, what a talent. We have an amazing creative team, just top-notch people that are really in love with the show. Andy Señor, who's our associate director, who put the show up in Holland. There's a production in Amsterdam right now of On Your Feet.
Of course there is.
And,
why wouldn't there be?
Yeah, and there are plans to do it in many, many countries. So that's exciting. But we have the best, which is great. And for me, it's just like the cherry on the top, working with these people that are so good and so talented and have so been so gracious with me. It's just a blessing.
Yeah, the show will be here till April the 8th at the Cadillac Palace Theater in Chicago. You can go to BroadwayInChicago.com. to get tickets, and Mauricio Martinez plays Emilio Estefan in the show. It's wonderful to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. I hope we see you again soon.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. This is how I talk in the show, because Emilio talks like
this. That's very
Emilio-like.
Yeah. That is a...
What are you talking about? I talk like him.
Well, now you sound like Jackie Mason. What? I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm just singing your song. I just came to do the conga. I don't know.
Come and shake your body, baby. Do the conga.
You know, you mentioned earlier that this is the final year or the final time that we will be able to watch these.
For the Shamrock Shuffle. Right, before this becomes a mattress store.
Before it's the mattress store.
A lot of people know it's going to happen
here
at Tribune Tower.
First of all, we should get them as an advertiser, the mattress store.
True.
And then do the show from there.
from this
like
very
old days, yes.
Oh, that would be great to do a show.
Get them to be an advertiser.
On the display of mattresses.
Yes.
Hmm. Now on that queen-size fitted mattress with the news, here's Dave Schwann.
We hear Schwann just breathing deeply, snoring. Gonna have the triple bunk bed situation going on.
Doing the Shemp snore.
Now see how personal this is.
Come together, round children, wherever you roam. And admit that the waters around you have grown.
Chicago's very own Oscar winner Jennifer Hudson performing at the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C., yesterday, among the many performers, including Miley Cyrus and Chicago's own Common, was there. Lin-Manuel Miranda, Ben Platt performing yesterday as well. Just one amazing and touching performance after another, in addition to the very, very moving speeches that were given by students, by teenagers who are in schools, who are motivated to organize this march and to put it on because they're tired of the school shootings that are going on. And, you know, as they say, nothing being done. Others will disagree with that. Interesting, the reaction. I've read a few texts on our text line this morning of people saying, why don't you tell these kids to keep their mouths shut and let the legislators do their jobs? Why don't you tell that to Jennifer Hudson, whose family was murdered, whose mother was murdered by gun violence, whose brother and little, at the time, seven-year-old nephew was murdered? Why don't you tell them to shut up? You know, they've had it. Why don't you tell it to some of these students who were friends with and saw their schoolmates and teachers gunned down in their school? Don't you tell them to shut up. These kids are sick of it, and they're doing something about it. I give a lot of credit to these kids and the celebrities who are out there supporting them. I know it's popular to not like the celebrities, but, you know, George and Amal Clooney donated $500,000 to this. $500,000 to help stage the event, to pay for the event. Steven Spielberg did the same thing. Jimmy Fallon was there. Glenn Close, Cher was there. Kim Kardashian and Kanye West were among those who were there. Ariana Grande, she was performing when the terrorist bomb went off in Manchester, England, and is no stranger to violence like that. Paul McCartney, very interestingly, without a lot of fanfare, except that he's Paul McCartney, and wherever he goes, it's you know, a certain amount of attention that is garnered. He simply marched with people. And on the street, a CNN reporter went up to him to find out why he felt it was important to be there.
Mr. McCartney, hi there. We're with CNN. Can we just get a quick question for you? Yeah. Just give us a sense of why it was important for you to come out here today.
Just to support the people.
Yeah. What do you hope can be accomplished? Do you think that can happen at the legislative level? We've seen it happen at the state level in places like Florida and here in New York.
You know, I'm like everyone. I don't know. But this is what we can do. And so I'm here to do it. One of my best friends was killed in gun violence right around here. So it's important to me.
Understood. Thank
you. Paul McCartney on the streets of New York. It looks like right along Central Park West.
You know who he was talking about.
Yeah, well, just a few blocks. He was just a few blocks away from where John Lennon was murdered on the street outside of his residence at the Dakotas in 1980. You know, the people who are saying, why don't you tell these people to shut up? Why don't you tell it to people like Paul McCartney, whose friend was murdered on the street because a gun was so available?
And signing autographs at the moment.
And signing autographs and being nice to people. John Lennon, when at the time of the murder, by a deranged person. You know, that's part of what the people are asking for. These kids have said they support the Second. They said they support the Second Amendment. They have said they support people's rights to own guns. They do not like the undue influence that the NRA has on our lawmakers. They do not like that the lawmakers have failed to act on banning military-style weapons, the AR-15 in particular. That's what they don't like. The NRA reacted by sending out a tweet to all of this yesterday saying today's protests are not spontaneous, meaning yesterday's protests. Gun-hating billionaires and Hollywood elites are manipulating and exploiting children as part of their plan to destroy the Second Amendment and strip us of our right to defend ourselves and our loved ones, which is a big, fat lie. These kids have said over and over again, they are not out to destroy the Second Amendment. They're not out to take anyone's guns away. They're out for sensible gun laws. And they're out to get rid of military style. So why the NRA is issuing a statement which is 100% untrue is beyond me. And anyone who has a problem with any of this, somebody, you know, some of you are texting in your opinions on them. You're entitled to your opinions on it. Take your opinions and tell it to someone who's been murdered in the streets to gun violence. Your words are lost on me. Tell it to someone who's lost their children to gun violence. and see how your words then go over. It's easy to anonymously text something in. Tell it to someone who has actually lost someone and see how that goes over.
Within oratory distance is Bughouse Square. Old Man Newberry, in offering a library to the city, insisted on a proviso. The square on which it stands shall be dedicated to free speech, any kind of speech. On a given spring, summer, or fall evening, as many as 5 soapboxes feature impassioned men, and occasionally an impassioned woman. I am told Emma Goldman once held forth here. Just last month, in this year, 1926, I heard Lucy Parsons. She's the widow of Albert, one of the Haymarket martyrs. This feisty old lady. 40 years before, she had become a young widow as Albert Parsons, the bonny one, walked to the gallows singing Annie Laurie. It was an 8-hour day these troublemakers had in mind. She is shabbily dressed, and yet there's something elegant about her.
Just hearing the voice of Studs Terkel again gives me goosebumps. One of the most legendary voices, period, but certainly one of the most legendary voices on Chicago radio, in his infamous style of storytelling that he delivered from 1952 to 1997 on WFMT in Chicago. And now you can hear the words of Studs Terkel again in the Studs Terkel Radio Archive, consisting of 5,600 programs that are being made available to you on the internet to celebrate what would have been Studs' 106th birthday. How about that? So you'll really get a blast of Chicago history. Tony Macaluso is the director of network syndication for WFMT and kind of the brainchild behind this whole thing. Welcome. Nice to have you.
Thanks,
here
Dean.
With us today. Do you get that same feeling when you hear Studs' voice? I mean, I'm sure you've gone through most of these recordings yourself. And, you know, maybe it's just kind of commonplace to you here. But
no, I still get goosebumps listening.
Yeah.
Studs like to talk about this concept called the feeling tone, which is the sense you get from somebody's voice, what's communicated beyond just the literal meanings of the words, yeah. but the way they pause or use silence or laugh or the emotion that's implicit there. And I feel that not only with Studs, but with all the people that he spoke with.
I'm amazed that it's taken this long for something like this to become available to the public. I would have thought that something like this would have been out there or at the Museum of Broadcast Communication or someplace where people could go hear the words in some of these amazing interviews that Studs did.
Well, it took a series of real happy accidents. Studs gave his tapes to the Chicago History Museum when he retired in 1997. And they're big old reel-to-reels, 5,600, and fairly fragile. I mean, they get one chance to digitize them, and the chemicals can flake off. But fortunately, the Library of Congress took all the tapes in and said, we will digitize these. These are a national treasure. It was about $1 million project to digitize all the tapes. And then the History Museum came back to us, Studs' old station, and said, can you come up with a way to make these reach a wider audience, especially a new generation, young audiences around the world? And so we embarked on this project.
And talk about the scope. I mean, do you have all the programs through those years, or like a lot of the old shows? I'm very familiar with, and you will never hear Studs Terkel ever in any way be correlated with Bozo the Clown in any way. But in much the same way, this classic part of Chicago history, Bozo. Really, there was very little that was preserved through the years.
Yeah, fortunately, Studs and his colleagues, people like Lois Baum at the station, by the late 50s began to save most of his programs, in part because he himself began using them as a kind of archive. He would have a guest on, and he would go back into the shelves and pull out a voice from the past. So if he was talking to Carl Sagan, the great astronomer, he might grab an interview with another scientist from decades past as a way to start off the conversation. Mm. So he himself started to realize it was an archive as it was still alive.
Yeah, we have a similar archive of Roy Leonard interviews, interviewing some of the great entertainment figures from the last 50 years, when Roy first started here at WGN. What are the greatest finds that you have that are available And, you know, talk about the variety of kinds of shows that you have.
Yeah, there's a few.
Some of which we're going to play for you here this morning, by the way.
Well, the classic is Right Stud Sitting Down One-on-One, as we are here with, say, Martin Luther King or Rosa Parks or Cesar Chavez. But also Studs traveled the world with his portable tape recorder. And this was a real discovery for me, how much field recording he did. So we have Studs in China riding trains in 1980 with Chinese Red Guards not long after Mao died, or Studs sitting around a table with a dissident poet in the Soviet Union in the 70s and during the Cold War, or Studs in South Africa in 1963 on farms visiting with leaders of the African National Congress. So those were a real discovery, but also Studs creating these kind of radio dramas with his friend Nelson Algren or Herman Kogan, Rick Kogan's father.
Yeah.
So wide variety of things.
Yeah, we're going to actually hear a clip of Studs with Herman Kogan, Rick Kogan's father, and also the great Mike Royko. You know that's going to be great. Tony, we didn't mention, I mean, all of this is accessible to people online.
Yes, starting May 16th, right now a little bit's up, but on May 16th, thousands of programs will be up online, searchable with transcripts. And the idea is not just to be able to listen to them, but to be able to reuse them. So teachers, journalists, artists, documentary filmmakers can go in and actually use the audio as the basis for new projects or thinking about the history and about the history in different ways.
Yeah. Did you ever interview Studs Terkel at any point through the years?
Actually, I did. Now that you bring it up, just for a quick moment, it was back in the good old WFYR days, Dean.
Fire radio, man.
Fire radio, and we called Studs to get some reaction on the death of Count Basie.
Oh, wow.
And we had a chance to talk to him for a few minutes. And, of course, who else would you call for something like that?
Exactly.
You know? So he was very gracious and talked to us for a few minutes on the phone. And somewhere in a box, I still have that reel of tape.
I interviewed him, I think, two or three times for books that had come out. And we had him here on the show, and I am rarely starstruck, but guys like him would throw me, and not to mention that it's a Chicago legend. It's Studs Terkel, which blew my mind, but also the manner in which he constructed his sentences. And Tony Macaluso is here, who's put together this Studs Terkel radio archive. What you're talking about is the manner in which he spoke, the rhythm, the music that he used to tell stories, and the pauses that it drew you into the conversation.
Like, one thing I've really come to appreciate is the fact that Studs started his life off. He was an actor. He was a radio drama actor. He played gangsters in old radio dramas in the 1930s and did theater. And even though he was a journalist, an oral historian, there was also that sense of theater always about his programs and a sense of making it an event. One of his favorite sentences about himself, what he chose as his epitaph, was, "Curiosity did not kill this cat." And that omnivorous curiosity about music and politics and literature, almost any subject under the sun, we have interviews with in this archive, and leading people from their field.
Yeah, what are we going to hear in this cut of Studs talking with another great Chicagoan, Mike Royko, and Herman Kogan, one of the great journalists in Chicago history, happened to be the father of the Tribune and WGN's Rick Kogan.
Well, this is a moment from 1967, kind of a pivot in Studs' life, when at the age of 55. He started a whole new chapter writing oral history books, which is the thing that he's maybe best known for outside of Chicago. And his very first book, Division Street, about Chicago, really a portrait of Chicago as an American village at a time when things were fraying in the 1960s. And his show was essentially taken over by two old pals, Royko and Herman Kogan. And they turned the tables and decided to interview Studs on the occasion of his first oral history book. He published a jazz book earlier than that. And it's just a great moment of warmth and friendship and celebrating the power of radio.
Yeah, take a listen to this from the Studs Terkel Radio Archive.
This is a very auspicious occasion. The day the publication of his book, Division Street America. And as we pick him up off the floor...
I am floored. I have nothing to say at the moment.
You're going to talk.
One of these rare occasions... I'm inarticulate. I really am quite I expected Nancy Wilson Ross taped this one. This happened just this very moment. Highly improvisational. I'm a little nervous. Mike Royko to my left. I mean that geographically, not ideologically.
Yeah, he's taking over the program. Now, we're going to take over. We've taken over the program.
You start? You just sit there.
I know how Studs doesn't like trite questions, and in his preface to Division Street America, he talks about the fact that he did not ask many of the people in the book trite questions. But we're going to start with a very original and very untrite question, Studs. How did you come to write Division Street America?
That's just so great. Hearing him, ironically, a little off kilter, being put off a base a little bit by his two old buddies who were with him.
A rare moment for someone who was always so prepared. One thing I love hearing is we talk to writers or people who were on Studs' show over the years, and they would say they would come in and Studs would have a book all written up with quotes and citations and making connections between different genres, different moments. You know, again, drawing on his own archive as well so often.
Yeah, we have a clip of another Chicago great, Mahalia Jackson, who was apparently very good friends with Studs, right?
They did TV together in the late 40s and 50s, and they both weathered the blacklist as well together. They both supported each other when at different moments one or the other was in danger of losing their career for various reasons. And Mahalia really opened up a whole new world for Studs when it came to music, in particular gospel. Studs was, as he liked to say, an agnostic, a cowardly atheist. And Mahalia, of course, was a big-hearted gospel believer. And they would have these great debates and arguments about theological questions and art and politics.
Well, this is a clip of them, of Mahalia in particular, talking about overcoming hate.
Talking about when he told Eve and Adam before they were married to go into the earth and replenish the earth. This, you know, and then men had, Solomon and all them people had 900 wives. Now you got to be married to get a baby. Stop God, earth from being.
Hey, you're an advanced thinker. Watch it now.
No, it hurts me. You know, this world will make you think, I tell you. It'll make you think, because if you don't, you go down the drain in despair. And I don't believe in letting nothing get down in my soul. I'll speak it out so I can be free, because if it stay inside, well, my God, I'll become a hateful woman, and I don't want to hate. I want to love.
One of the great gospel, maybe the greatest gospel performer of all time. Not even one of the greatest gospel singer of all time. And lifelong Chicago, and I was telling Tony during the break that when I was in high school, I worked at the A&P grocery store in Hyde Park.
Amazing story.
Every Saturday, without fail, Mahalia Jackson would come shopping with her lady friend. The two, she was, seemed like maybe in her 80s then, mid-80s.
That sounds right.
The two, with their little shopping carts, would come in my line. And I would check out the groceries every day. And I was just, I knew who Mahalia Jackson was.
Unbelievable.
So I was, maybe my first A-list encounter, I think, now that I'm thinking about it.
Well, one of the joys of doing the archive, too, is people who maybe are less familiar to younger generations, like Mahalia, this legendary figure. And in fact, one of my real joys so far was just 2 months ago, through the archive, that Studs and Mahalia made their Carnegie, well, Studs' Carnegie Hall debut. Mahalia sang there when she was alive. And this happened, who would have thought? But the archive was used for this festival about music and protest in the 1960s, and the great quartet, the Kronos Quartet, commissioned an original piece of music using Studs and Mahalia's voices from the archive as the foundation for this piece of music, this 25-minute glorious piece of music called Glorious Mahalia. And hearing their voices, I was able to go in Carnegie Hall, Studs and Mahalia from beyond the grave, essentially, speaking like you just heard, with the quartet's music wrapping around their voices, was something we never would have imagined for an audio archive, but it was really gratifying.
I can imagine some of the things that you must have found, discovered, that you didn't even know was there. You were telling me, we don't have the audio from this, but once the archive is up and I can go online and listen to anything, I'm especially going to look for the clip that you told me of Studs and Martin Luther King discussing politics, did you say?
Yeah, it was when Martin Luther King was here leading a protest against housing in Chicago, and it was at Mahalia Jackson's house at the end of a day out in the streets. Mahalia's in the other room making dinner, I think.
Studs has got his portable tape recorder and his cigar, and Martin Luther King, it sounds like, is lying down, maybe taking a nap, and Studs starts, they start having a conversation, and it's a different side of Martin Luther King than I've heard before. It's
the,
not
the magnificent
King.
Orator. Yeah. It was just two guys having a cocktail and a conversation.
And talking about life, yeah.
How about that? Studs famously took his portable tape recorder, which, you know, was super high-tech, I guess, back in those days, to be able to take your tape recorder with you someplace to record an interview. What were some of the more interesting mobile interviews that you found?
One of my favorite, Studs went down to Selma in 1965 for the march from Selma to Montgomery, and hearing him in the streets and in the hotels talking to people as history is unfolding in real time. But also Studs in Italy, for example. 1963, Studs went to Italy and went to Rome in the era of La Dolce Vita and interviewed Federico Fellini, the great film director, while he was on the set of Eight and a Half, one of his great movies. And a chaos of, you know, people speaking in Italian and English and translating and mistranslating. But it's, again, a glorious a slice of history to hear.
I feel like I should be smoking a cigar here this morning talking about the great Studs Terkel and the Studs Terkel radio archive that you must check out when it becomes available. May the 16th, we'll remind you as we get a little bit closer to it, more than 5,600 programs with not only one of Chicago's greatest speakers and orators and users of the English language to tell story, but truly one of the world's greatest, Studs Terkel. I love listening to some of his celebrity interviews, just for the wide range of celebrities that he talked to. Tony, talk a little bit about that, of some of the finds that you have in there.
Well, the people that I wouldn't have necessarily imagined Studs talking to, because, again, this idea of curiosity, he would stretch himself. So Studs sitting down with the Grateful Dead and Jerry Garcia. Although Studs had to actually call in backup help for that one. He called in a friend from Northwestern University, a Rolling Stone writer, and said, "You know, I might need your help here. I don't know about these Grateful Dead people. Help me figure out who they are."
Hippies.
Yeah. But also, you know, he would discover up-and-coming writers, someone like Margaret Atwood, who's now, you know, a known figure. He had her on his show when she was just a poet from Canada who no one really knew back in the 1960s. But musicians, but also scientists. I mean, Studs sitting down with Jacques Cousteau or Carl Sagan or others, when he's outside of his comfort zone, but the curiosity and the openness.
I wonder who he would be interviewing today, if he were around today, and, you know, would he be talking to, you know, which movie stars, which recording artists would interest him? I have to think that he would be fascinated by hip-hop. And the poetry and storytelling in hip-hop, I wonder if that would be the case.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because one of the things we're doing with the archive is we're creating a podcast that'll come out this summer. And the goal for that was to find someone young, a young artist, who could in some ways use Studs' archive in order to spark conversations today. And the podcast is going to be called Bug House Square. But the host for it, who we haven't quite announced yet, is a young, marvelous poet, female, very steeped in Studs' work and a scholar as well, and comes very much from a hip-hop sensibility, and finding those connections between what's going on in hip-hop today and how hip-hop artists and other artists today are using language, and what they can discover listening to these Studs tapes, and vice versa, how their work can carry things forward.
I think this next clip is from 1963, a very young Bob Dylan, talking with a super hip Studs Terkel.
Well, maybe it's just the time.
Yeah.
Now's the time. Maybe you have to belong to yourself, you know. And I think maybe in 1930, if I'm talking with Woody and Pete and some other people I know there, it seems like everything then was good and bad and black and white and easy to see. And wherever you only had one or two. When you stand on one side, you know people are either for you or against you, with you or behind you, or whatever you have. You know, nowadays, it's just, I don't know how it got that way, but it doesn't seem so simple or more than two sides. You know, it's not black and white anymore.
Something you said earlier, something you wrote, you belong to yourself, that's true. At the same time, you can't help but be connected with everybody else, which I suppose is why you write these songs. But take this one you sang, this one that I think is a...
think will be a classic, This Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. When you say a hard rain, what do you mean? Although you're
I just mean that some sort of end that's just got to happen, you know, which is very easy to see, but everybody doesn't really, it doesn't seem like, it seems like you're overlooking it. Well, it's bound to happen, you know, it's bound to happen. It seems like this, well, I'm not talking about that hard rain, meaning the atomic rain, that seems to me like the bomb is a god in some sort of a way. It's more of a god, the people worship it. Actually, you have to be nice to it, you know, you have to be careful what you say about it. You know, people work on it. They go 6 days a week and work on it.
About that, wow, yeah, that song could become a classic. That Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, and from 1963. Wouldn't it have been great if he would have said something about Loyola?
That's right. 55 years ago,
the year connection. Mm. I just want to wind up with Studs talking about Chicago, reading from his friend Nelson Algren's work. But I think you know, Chicagoans at the core will really love this one.
Side street bars that burn all night, blue oases and deserts of pavement and rail. Between the pretzel bowl and the pinball machine, wait nobody's, nobody knows. Waiting for the wind to die down or the rain to cease, a World Series to start and a score to come in, for snow to stop falling or a day to end. There are blue oases that burn all night in deserts of pavement, between rail and rail, where nobody's, nobody knows, wait the whole night long, each for his own lifelong life to begin.
That's so poignantly Chicago. Mm. Beautiful piece from Studs Terkel. And while I'm listening to it, I'm thinking, wow, I miss that man so much. But while I miss him physically, I still can hear his words now in the Studs Terkel radio archive that will become available May the 16th. How can people access it, or is it too early to even mention all of that?
No, they can go to studsterkel.org. There's a placeholder site where some interviews are up. There's a couple hundred interviews, and there's a newsletter. People can sign up. So when the full archive goes out, and then we'll have some public events. At May 15th at the Chicago History Museum, we'll have an event the day before it goes live. It's open to the public to come and have a drink and hear stories about Studs and clips and learn about the archive. And schools are using it, too, working with the Great Books Foundation. Great. So
good deals. Well, we'll be reminding everybody as we get a little bit closer to it. Tony Macaluso is the director of network syndication for WFMT. Are you still running Best of Studs, right?
That's right, absolutely. Every Friday night at 11 o'clock. So you can tune in and hear Studs there, too.
She was more like a Jesuit on a TV screen. I said, don't cheer, just say prayers, please. You are the nun who will dance with the poor in the round.
Sweet 16.
She says, I am the nun who will dance with the poor in the round.
Everyone knows who Sister Jean is. When she walks, eyes turn.
Sister always told me, be careful what you do. Don't go around breaking commandments.
You did so well.
And Sister always told me, be careful who you play. And be careful when you lose. Cause the carbon knows the truth. Hey, Sister Jean is not my mother. She's just a fan who happens to be a nun.
She's just a fan who happens to be a nun. And I'll bet if she wanted to moonwalk, she could. The Sister Jean song.
Still walking on air at Loyola.
Oh, man. Yeah, she doesn't need any moonwalking. The Ringer performs that song.
That is so cool.
It's great. I absolutely love it because, I mean, part of Loyola's Cinderella story is the Sister Jean legacy that's going along with it. Turner Sports NCAA play-by-play announcer Brian Anderson joins us right now, who called Sweet 16 and Elite 8 round for TBS. Brian, and it's great to have you on the program today. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure to be here. I'm already back in Milwaukee. I left after the game last night, so I'm not too far from you.
Ah, you were one of the smart ones that got out early. I think a lot of people may have done a little celebrating last night and are catching later flights today.
Yes, us announcers are good. We call it people surfing. We try to get on top of the wave and get out before the undertow comes in. And there was some serious undertow last night. It was great representation yesterday. Yeah. I thought we were worried after Kentucky lost to Kansas State that there were going to be a lot of empty seats in the building. But the bandwagon is growing by the day with Loyola, and it was full. There was 15,000 there last night. It looked great. Sounded great.
What is your sense of how this run has been going for Loyola? It's been, obviously, for us here in Chicago, amazing. But what's your sense on, you know, a more national scale?
Well, it's, you know, I was a fan of theirs to start the year, covering college basketball, as I do, around the Big Ten and the Big East. You know, we had, when they beat Florida, you know, that kind of got everybody's attention across the nation. So that was a regular season game, non-conference game, of course. But when they beat Florida, now you're starting to put some pieces together that they can handle size with the way they play. And then, so we were in Boise, my crew, Chris Weber and I were in Boise to start, and we were there with Kentucky, and we had Davidson. Arizona got beat. We had that Buffalo game. So, you know, over the years in college basketball, the mid-majors have really started to close the gap on the quote-unquote blue bloods of college basketball. So you started to see a little bit of a swell. So we were able to watch from afar the great run in the first two games and those miraculous shots to win the first two games by both Ingram first and then Custer second. So we show up to Atlanta, and then I think the narrative for us was, wow, this is a real Cinderella team. This is a university that really wasn't all that welcomed into their league. I mean, there was a lot of flack when they went into the Missouri Valley Conference on why would they even bring Loyola into that league. But so we kind of went with that narrative in the Sweet 16 game, but then Chris Weber and I sat and talked for a while prior to the game yesterday. And then I said it on the air yesterday, but it doesn't feel to me, once you watch them play, see how they're coached, how connected they are, how great they shoot the ball and the beautiful brand of basketball they play, it is a Cinderella story. I think there is a good narrative there, but they're good enough to win the national championship. That's kind of where we stood with it. And so we didn't want to go into yesterday's game with this, especially because you had another Cinderella team there in K-State, which nobody expected to do much. So for us, it was more about let's appreciate what they are as opposed to some of the side stories that's kind of making them famous right now. There'll be plenty of time for that, but they're a real threat to win a national championship. I believe they could play with any team, any of the teams that make it to the Final Four, and there are going to be some significant blue blood teams, you know, high-level programs.
Right.
I think they can match up with them.
Yeah, Andy Mazur from our WGN Sports Department is also here with us.
BA, how you doing?
Hey, Andy. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Nice call last night in the Sweet 16. I wanted to get your thoughts, too, about you mentioned coaching and Porter Moser. I've had a chance to be around him and in that program for at least a few games this year. And he just seems like the perfect guy for this team. And I like what you said about the fact that they can kind of adapt their game to whoever they play. And it seems like that is the case.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of his. I think what I like most about Porter is, you know, Andy, you've been around college basketball, too. It's you get a lot of nonsense from college basketball coaches. You get a lot of propaganda. And so he's refreshing because, you know, it did not go well for him at Illinois State. He had a good run at Arkansas Little Rock. He really rebuilt that program, had a great turnaround in 3 years there. And then he went to Illinois State, and he couldn't get that train on the track, and he was fired. And he said, instead of playing the blame game, he said, you know, that was the best thing that happened to me because I ended up as an assistant with Rick Majerus, and I spent 4 years as an assistant with Rick at St. Louis, and that really helped me round out everything I wanted to be as a head coach, the recruiting, the building of the program. And he's taken all of those principles that Rick Majerus had throughout his Hall of Fame career, and he applied those to Loyola Chicago, and it wasn't an easy start. You know, going into the Valley from the Horizon was a big shift. like I said, there was a lot of backlash about that move once Creighton left to the Big East. So he built it the right way, and he got pieces. He got versatile pieces. So, you know, if you want to get into the weeds a little bit, they play this four-out brand of basketball. And if you have good guards in college basketball and you have four of them around and one guy in the middle and there's a lot of space to work, you can have success. And the difference with Loyola compared to the rest of the teams that I see, other than maybe Villanova, is that most teams have two or three guards that can actually shoot, like really shoot. And Loyola, all four of their guys can shoot and score, can attack. So they have weapons that at every point on their offense that can score. So that's why I think Porter, you know, he's invested in that kind of recruiting with winners. You know, he's got seven state champions on his team. And that matters when you're getting into crunch time. And as we've seen, they've been up for the challenge.
You know, I appreciated, too, the fact that you guys pointed out Jerry Harkness last night, the captain of the 1963 team. And I thought your partner, Chris Weber, waxed very poetically and very nicely about the impact that Jerry had, not only on Loyola, but also on the culture of basketball.
You know, that was actually the best part. Everybody was asking me, are you disappointed it turned into a blowout? I mean, it actually got within 12 there at one point. They had a 23-point lead. But for me, because the Loyola-Nevada game was so back and forth, it was so tight, we didn't have a chance to really tell that story. And last night we did. And it's a really important piece. It's an important team to recognize, as you all know, in Chicago. I think the 1966 Texas Western team gets most of the headlines when you talk about race relations and how sports connects to the civil rights movement. And rightly so. They started five African-American players in that famous national championship game and throughout their season. So that's an important team for sure. But I think the team that paved the way for that 66 Texas Western team was the 63 Loyola Chicago team. And so they really broke those unwritten rules that existed among the coaches at the time. In the South, the unwritten rule was you would have no black players on the floor. Of course, in the North, in the Midwest, there was kind of this unwritten rule that you would have no more than two. So, and they thought they were very progressive by having at least two, right? So the 63 team actually started at 1.4 African-American players, and then that just set the wheels in motion. And then Jerry is such a great ambassador for that team and for that movement. And, you know, what I really like about him is the way he connects the players from the other teams, like Joe Dan Gold. We showed you that famous picture that most people have seen, the handshake. Joe Dan Gold played for Mississippi State. You think about the impact of a guy, a white player,
right,
shaking hands with a black player when most teams were forfeiting games or not even showing up to play games if there were any black players on their team. So we kind of passed that over a little bit, but, man, the historical significance of that is really impressive. And I'm glad, you know, Obama honored that team in 13, and they were all inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame on the 50th anniversary as well. So that's really – really, one of my favorite things about this run for this current Ramblers team is that we can shine a spotlight on that 63 team.
Yeah, one of the many things I think that is so relatable, you know, why people are so jumping on this, because there are so many levels at which people can relate. Maybe number one, well, maybe number two amongst them. I wanted to put aside their ability to play basketball, but the Sister Jean impact on this. Brian, for you, what does this mean?
You know, I look at her as a symbol of something that is something great in our country, that we hear so many negative headlines. And, you know, I've thought a lot, we've talked a lot about how to approach Sister Jean and that phenomena. And we do not want to make her, for lack of a better word, a mascot, right? It's right. She is a famous figure that's an ancillary figure in this tournament, as is Mariah Musselman, the 8-year-old daughter of Eric Musselman. And so when you're dealing with people like that, you want to make sure that if you're going to do it, at least in my opinion, you want to tell the full story. And for me, there's a really strong faith angle with that story. And it's okay. I'm a man of faith, and it's okay to express faith. And I thought Porter Moser did a great job with that. We all may disagree on all these topics and our faith perspective. That's okay. But we can all exist together And for me, it was watching her emerge and the way she's handling everything. And she's so eloquent, you know. I just love her peace. She has this peace about her. And I was thinking last night, you know, I think the best interview, hopefully Loyola Chicago wins a national championship, right? That's what all Chicagoans are hoping for. But if they lose, that's the one voice you'd want to hear from, right? She would be the one voice that gives you a sense of, look, this is in a compartment of sports and athletics, and it's fun, and we should all enjoy it and be together. But there's a bigger picture story here. And her life, you know, I don't know much about her life, but what I've learned in the last couple of weeks is extraordinary. So I can't even imagine knowing everything about her that we could find out. And so she's put herself out there, and she's been gracious, and she's fantastic. She thanks everybody. So that's kind of, for me, what that stands for. It's a kind of a more wholesome way that I think there are a lot of people that appreciate that kind of lifestyle and that kind of approach to life. We see so much nonsense.
Yeah, especially in the world world today, where you can't even, you know, watch a newscast right now without seeing nails being thrown at one another. Here's a voice of logic and peace and rational thinking. It's been a lot of fun to watch it, that's for sure. TBS will be home to the live coverage for the Final Four national semifinals and the national championship games as well, with team cast presentations on TNT and True TV. Brian, I really appreciate that you could spend a little bit of time with us. I had no idea that you were so close up in the Milwaukee area. That makes sense, though, since you do Brewers games as well.
Yeah, we're right here.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
Right here. Great to be with you.
See you, man.
Appreciate you joining us. Thank you very much. I love that you call him by initials.
I've known him for a long time. Yeah, when he was with the Brewers, I think it just started with the Padres when he got the Brewers job. So we've run in the same circles for a while.
And does he call you AM?
Once in a while. But BA is just a natural nickname.
You guys in sports have such cool nicknames for each other.
Sure thing. Dino?
I interviewed Tyler Perry yesterday. I would never go up to him and go, hey, TP.
TP. You wouldn't call him Ty?
I would not. If I did, it would be the last thing I ever called him. We're backed up with guests here now because we had a wonderful conversation, as I'm sure you heard, with talking about the Loyola Ramblers in the last half hour.
Oh, right.
And so now we have two guests for our food show that we wanted to spend a little more time with. And because you've interrupted me so many times.
Sorry.
During the news.
Sorry. I interrupted you?
Yeah. Yeah.
In my newscast?
Yes. I'm gonna bring both of our guests on at the same time, and that way we'll get the enjoyment of everyone.
What an inspired idea!
Thank you, thank you very much.
An inspired idea, my good man.
Seth Zurer is the genius behind Bacon Fest Chicago, that is going to be taking place April 6th and 7th at the UIC Forum. Seth, thank you for joining us. Good morning.
My pleasure, Dean, anytime.
Good afternoon, actually, now. If Shwani would quit interrupting me so much, we could have had this on time. So I want to talk about Bacon Fest, but I also want to bring on our other guest, who you see every Sunday night at 10:30, right? Is that 10? Or is it 10 o'clock?
It's 10 p.m.
I'm usually asleep by then, Elliot, so you're going to have to excuse me for that. But
that's okay.
Chicago's Best is the program you hear us talking about here all the time on WGN. And Seth, you know Elliot Bambra from Chicago's Best on WGN TV, right?
Of course. He's doing well. He has come to Bacon Fest many times. In fact, he can probably give the Bacon Fest interview if you want.
Hey, Seth. How you doing, buddy?
Good, Elliot. Great to talk to you.
Elliot was going to be talking about, where to go for Easter brunch. So we're going to combine the two interviews. And really, wouldn't bacon make a fantastic spread for your Easter brunch this year?
Bacon actually is a composite of one of the places I recommended for brunch, which is Whisk. They have an obsession with Ron Swanson, and they have a Swanson burger there, which is wrapped in bacon. So bacon, as Seth knows, Dean, bacon makes the world go round.
Right. If they could somehow make some bacon creation that looks like a little Easter bunny, that really would be perfect. And I have to think that somebody has taken a marshmallow peep and wrapped it in bacon and prepared it that way. To me, that sounds delicious, actually.
That sounds like perfection.
Explain.
Yeah, why not? I mean, we've seen people do a lot stranger things with bacon.
I'm sure you have. This is your 10th year of Bacon Fest Chicago. Explain what it is to everyone.
Yeah, so Bacon Fest, like it sounds, is a all-day festival devoted to America's favorite cured meat, bacon. So we invite 150-ish of the city's best chefs to come together on April 6th and 7th at the UIC Forum to share their own personal creative bacon dishes with our ticketed guests. If you want to go, they have to get tickets in advance at our website, baconfestchicago.com. But then once you have that ticket, it's like an all-access pass to a bacon wonderland, where everywhere you look, there is a chef who's offering you something creative and delicious made with bacon. There's a local brewer with fresh, cold beer for you to drink down. There are cocktails. There's wine. There are people in bacon costumes. There's bacon poetry. It's like an all-encompassing work of bacon art, all in the course of just a few hours.
Well, the thing that that I've noticed in the evolution of this Bacon Fest, that, you know, it started off where there'd be a bacon burger, you know, something really simple, mm-hmm. where they lay a couple of strips of bacon over something. But it's become a lot more sophisticated than that over the past several years.
Absolutely. We've been very lucky to have super talented, award-winning chefs that do incredibly refined and delightful things with bacon. So, like, for example, this chef named John de Rousier from Innovazi on the North Shore, he soaks bacon pork belly with a little mash salad. So it's like interesting flavors that you wouldn't necessarily expect to be paired with bacon, but that are delicious and creative and fun.
Elliot, what have been some of your favorites from Bacon Fest through the years?
Oh, my goodness. I'm just trying to think. There's so many. The thing is, as I was telling you off air, Dean, is that all these restaurants are so creative with their dishes that there are no two alike. They incorporate it with everything from dessert to an appetizer to bread to sweet, sour, savory. I honestly, there is nothing that just solely sticks out. It's just a cacophony of delicious, salty, cured bacon, nooski, amazing bombness.
It's the variety and the the creativity with which they use to create some of these things. All kinds of different foods, like a bacon mac and cheese. Now, who could? That's just the.
It sounds revolting.
Okay, you're going to have to leave now.
It's sarcasm.
I'm sorry, you're kicked off the show right now.
Does sarcasm not string well on radio? I can't think of any worse things. That just sounds
bacon bourbon, bacon gumballs, bacon lip balm, bacon cheesecake, bacon beer, bacon tacos, yum, bacon mousse. Did you know that Garrett's Popcorn just recently introduced a Garrett's cheddar, which is delicious, now with bacon flavor? They have a bacon flavored Garrett's now also.
I didn't know that.
I did see that hickory smoked bacon.
That's right.
There will be a few different bacon popcorn options at Bacon Fest, including ones studded with chunks of candied bacon. It's a really does make everything better.
It is delicious. The Carasotis Icon Theater down in the South Loop on Roosevelt Road, where I see a lot of movies. They offer, as one of their concessions, buttered popcorn sprinkled with delicious chunks of bacon in the popcorn.
And in fact, they will be at Bacon Fest.
That would make Mamma Mia probably one of the more enjoyable movies, or it would increase the terrible movie.
You could slaughter about 15 pigs, and it still would not make Mamma Mia any more delicious to me.
Okay. But it would be worth a try, right?
It wouldn't. It definitely would not. Okay, so how do people go to Bacon Fest, Seth?
They should get tickets in advance at our website, baconfestchicago.com. We have options from $60 for a bacon-only ticket that lets you just try all the dishes, all the way up to $160 for a VIP ticket that gets you access 1 hour early, as well as access to a brand-new VIP lounge, the Old Forester Speakeasy. So it's an all-inclusive ticket. You get to eat and drink and have 3 hours of unfettered bacon bliss.
Sounds great. I appreciate you joining us, and we'll keep us posted on all things bacon.
Can do, and I hope to see you all at Bacon Fest.
When we come back from the break, we'll talk with Elliot about options for Easter brunching. People have gotten away from having Easter at their homes. A lot easier to go out, let somebody else cook, let somebody else clean up. We'll tell you about some of Elliot's choices from Chicago's Best coming up. I never get to go to brunch, period, Easter or otherwise, because I'm always here on Sunday morning.
Uh-huh.
I haven't been to an Easter brunch in like 25 years.
Well, if you eat
a Sunday brunch,
if you eat as much a brunch as you do of the Stan's donuts that I brought you, and I stopped in there and they were like, if you're going to hang out with Dean, you need a dozen.
Yeah,
you need a dozen.
Yeah, I'm surprised they stopped at that. Honestly.
Right, and you haven't touched them yet.
I don't eat stuff during the show.
Okay, well. I think your audience would enjoy listening to you munch on food and talk to guests.
I am the only broadcaster in America that does not eat stuff while they're on the air.
That's great live
ironically,
content.
Ironically, since I host the food show.
Well, there you go.
Do you have favorite brunch places? And especially places, I know they're probably contacting you to tell people about great Easter brunch places.
I don't discriminate against any meal, whether it's pre-breakfast, breakfast, brunch, lunch, dinner, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I like all meals. I like all food.
Yeah.
As the fans of Chicago's Best
will
testify.
Which kills me because you're like so skinny.
Are you going to go to the obvious question next? The one that people always ask me first?
I'm not going to. I'm just saying that it's frustrating. It's frustrating that you never stop eating, it seems.
I do not. And a lot of people think that when the camera stops rolling, they're like, you just take a few nibbles, right? And I'm like, no.
No, I've been around you off camera. I know that you're...
I like food.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
It's good that you have that metabolism to do that.
Smoke and mirrors and also horizontal striped t-shirts. That's the way to carry it. That's all it is.
Okay, that's good to know.
It's all it is. Brunch, though.
Yeah,
brunch. What do you want to talk about? What kind?
Well, tell me some of your favorite places.
I like to focus on places that have been on the show before, so you know we can spread the Chicago's Best love. But there's some bunch of great places out there. I wanted to give you a little bit of variety and your audience a little bit of variety, so they could decide and choose for themselves exactly what they wanted to go to. So there's a great place on the south side, in the burbs, southwest burbs, and a lot of people complain, oh, it's all just chains out there. There's no good original food.
That's not true.
There is a place that would live just as well in River North as it does in Palos Heights, and it's called the Harvest Room.
Okay.
It is a beautifully run husband and wife team. Top chef works in there. It's a delightful place to eat, a little bit higher elevated kind of brunch, but they also, what resonates with me, they have a very traditional British traditional cuisine called Scotch eggs, which I'm sure you've had Scotch eggs before.
I have indeed.
If anyone's never had a Scotch egg before,
I thought you were from, by your accent, from Alabama.
No, Australia originally.
Is that
true? No, I get that a lot
true?
Though. Oh. Everyone always says, "You're from Australia." It's like, no, wrong side of the world, but we're close enough. But yeah, I emigrated to Alabama when I was six and spent a lot of time down there growing up. Hence the accent.
Yeah,
but a Scotch, for anyone who doesn't know what a Scotch egg is, it's a boiled egg. It's wrapped in pork sausage meat, then breaded and deep fried, and it is a comfort food delight.
Yeah.
It sounds weird, but unless you've tried it.
It actually sounds fantastic, and it is. I've had them, and they are quite delicious.
They're incredible.
It's a combination of like all the great foods in one.
Mm-hmm. Fried and pork and
eggs. Did not know that they had that at the Harvest Room, Palos Heights. Another place that you've listed that I have been to, never for brunch, is the Polo Inn in Bridgeport. A delightful place.
It is. I love Bridgeport. I love the South Side. And I put this on the list because I wanted to be seasonal. And they offer something at the weekends called a gospel brunch, where you can go in, have your meal. All the meals, by the way, are named after saints. They have this incredible Saint Magdalene creme brulee French toast, which is outrageous. They also have a Benedict, a Pope Benedict that comes out. And they sing, and they bring out his picture frame, and they walk it in, they sing. And then after you've eaten, they get out the hymnals. And it's gospel time. So if you're a little bit more traditional, if you don't want to miss out on church, or if you want to just sing some religious songs, then the Polo Inn is the place for
you. Polo Inn in Bridgeport.